3 tonight is the update from Brian Deets, and he has with him Dr. Carr, who will be doing the presentation. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for everything that you're doing out there at McDonough District. I know it's trying times for you as well as everybody else, but we appreciate everything you've done. So, Dr. Carr, go right ahead.
Thank you all for allowing us to come and let you know what we've been up to at the hospital. It's been a very busy 4 weeks for us. And I'm going to try and go in order so that I don't skip anything. We have several tents on the campus now. There are two by the emergency room. One of these is for screening visitors, employees, and patients who do not have respiratory issues. They are asked about symptoms, their temperature is taken, and then they're allowed in the building. The second tent is for anybody who has respiratory complaints. They have a mask placed immediately to protect the screener, and then they have a series of questions asked. Their oxygen saturation is checked, their temperature is checked, and if they are acutely ill, then they're sent to the emergency room. If they are not acutely ill, then they're asked to return home and call their primary care provider. This is to try and minimize the risk of allowing COVID virus into our emergency room and exposing our personnel. The third tent is the drive-through tent, and this is where we can collect specimens. In order to have a specimen, you have to have an order, and you have to pre-register. The triage hotline is called, and I have that number in the chat if anybody wants a copy. And they will then do a protocol screen and pre-register the patient. The initial test is to look for influenza A, influenza B, strep, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, which are other things that can cause COVID that are more common and would obviate the need for a COVID test. If those are all negative, then they could possibly have a COVID test if they meet guidelines. Routine labs can also be drawn there. So somebody who has a pro time or has labs that need to be drawn can drive through, have their blood drawn at the tent, and not have to come into the hospital. Again, trying to minimize traffic in the hospital, to minimize the risk of exposure in the hospital. Labs can be drawn between 7 and 11 in the morning, and between 7 and 8, we encourage people who may have immunocompromised disease to come through the tent then, because we won't be screening for COVID during that hour. There is also a new test available that the lab just added for a viral panel. It uses a molecular testing technique and is both more sensitive and more specific for influenza and for RSV. As far as clinical activities, things we've done in the hospital, I've asked Dr. McPherson to assume the role of inpatient preparedness, and he's done a wonderful job with that. Dr. Sparks is in charge of infection control and conservation of personal protective equipment. And Dr. Reeves has convened the ethics committee to start discussions about how we would allocate ventilators in case we were in a situation where we had more people in need of ventilators than we had ventilators. I don't think we'll get to that point, but we need to be prepared in case we do. Also shut down all elective surgery. And so in order to decide what is elective and what can wait, or what can wait and what needs to go right away, we have a three physician panel consisting of myself as chief medical officer, Dr. Sparks as president of the medical staff, and Dr. McPherson as the director of the hospitalist program to make the decision about what needs to go now and what can be deferred. We've also offered support from the hospital for independent practitioners who've been affected by shutdown of elective surgery. Dr. Biagini and Dr. White are both going to be working with the hospitalist service and are working as independent contractors now in order to keep them in the community so that we can use their services when this is all over with. We've done a number of facility changes. The 2 East Wing, which had previously served as our obstetrics department when the new building was being built, has been converted into our COVID wing. It has 10 beds, 3 of which can accommodate ventilators. It also has a vestibule at the entry, so that allows us to very securely keep people who may have the COVID virus in a place where they're unlikely to contaminate the rest of the hospital. The senior behavioral health area has been converted into 12 critical care beds, all of which can support ventilators, and all of which are now fully stocked and ready to accept patients if needed. They will be used if we get more than 2 or 3 patients who have COVID. We can then move them down to that end of the hall, isolate them, use that as a critical care area, and that allows our current intensive care unit to continue to be utilized for postoperative with sepsis not due to COVID, people with who need pacemakers and other things. The ambulance garage has been set up so that we now have 10 beds there for ER overflow and for respiratory care in case it's needed. Physical therapy has been evaluated and can accommodate a number of recovering COVID patients if necessary, and we have had discussions through Edgar Rodriguez about potentially even pulling a FEMA mobile hospital in if needed for overflow, and that would go in our north parking lot, the physician lot, and would come with personnel as well. So if we get that far, we have plans to ramp up as much as possible. Right now, we have 60 beds available. We have 19 ICU and critical care beds available with 3 additional rooms that could accommodate ventilators for a total of 22 beds available for critical care and ventilator management. We have 12 ventilators in-house and ready for use if needed, and we've requested 11 more from the state. We've also requested additional monitors from the state, IV poles, and beds. A quick word about testing. It's been a point of uncertainty for some folks. Currently, the Illinois Department of Public Health has 4 groups that they recommend testing on. Those are hospitalized people with pneumonia of unknown cause, healthcare workers who are symptomatic. Obviously, we want to test them. If they're positive, we want to keep them away from patients. If they're negative, we want to get them back to work. Symptomatic patients in congregate housing, such as nursing homes, prisons, sheltered care homes, we want them tested to avoid contaminating a large population. And then the 4th group is a symptomatic employee of a congregate housing unit. So if we have a nurse aide in a nursing home who's symptomatic, we're going to get her tested quickly using the same criteria. Private testing is available through LabCorp. If we use it too much, at one point, the turnaround time for was actually 11 days. So getting a test that you're not going to have the answer for 11 days is not much help. We only test people in whom the test is going to make a difference in management. So if someone has a relatively mild illness and they think they might have COVID, the answer is going to be go home, isolate, and wait to get well. If you get worse, then we will take care of it. A quick word about COVID, some recent information. About 20% of people who contract the virus will remain asymptomatic. It is good news for them. It is bad news for everybody else. Because they can walk around and shed the virus and not even know they have it. The other thing which came to light today in an article from Nature Medicine is that people are most infectious between 0 and 2 days before they become symptomatic. So people who are going to become symptomatic will be shedding virus 2 days to have the illness. Luckily, 80% of people will have a relatively mild illness. They'll be treated at home, and they will recover with very little sequelae. The mortality rate varies. It's been reported as high as 3.5% when it initially started. Currently in the United States, about 1.4%. But due to the lack of testing, we really don't have a good denominator. We don't know how many people have had asymptomatic disease or mild disease and never been tested. So the actual mortality is probably significantly lower. It's probably much higher. That's what we're up to at the hospital. Kind of a lot to get done in 3.5-4 weeks. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
This is Tara Litchfield. I was wanting to know, so how long does it take for a test to come back?
If we're able to use the IDPH lab, it usually takes 36 to 42 hours or 48 hours. If we have to go to LabCorp, that really varies depending upon how many people are trying to get tested. That's one of the reasons why we're trying to be very selective in who does get tested.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions? Brian, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
We appreciate all you're doing out there, and thank you very much for trying to make the hospital available for our residents. We appreciate that. Dr. Carr presented me with a outline of his comments today. I will send that out to the board members tomorrow so everybody can have a copy of that electronically. So thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Get some rest and take care of yourself. Thank you again. We appreciate you coming.